Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. We Ride Upon Styx is a new novel set in 1989 about a high school field hockey team. It's full of pitch-perfect 80s references. Janet Jackson, a notebook with the face of Breakfast Club heartthrob on it, Emilio Estevez. So it belongs to a field hockey team. There's a field hockey team that really, really wants to win. So what's special about this field hockey team? Imagine if the school was in the show Stranger Things and it had a field hockey team that got its own spinoff story. But instead of fighting otherworldly monsters, the team made a deal with them. Specifically, in the story, the players write their names down in the notebook in exchange for better luck on the field. At first, things go really well. But then they discovered they have to make more and more sinister measures to keep their winning streak of good fortune going and appease Emilio. That's the name they've given the dark power to which they've become indebted. The backdrop to all this wickedness is Danvers, Massachusetts, which was once known as a Salem village. The very same Salem where more than 100 people were accused of witchcraft in the 17th century. It's a coincidence that the book's characters do not miss. Danvers is also the town where the book's author, Quan Barry, grew up. Barry is a professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who has published 4 books of poetry and now 2 novels. Quan will be at Books Are Magic tonight at 7 p.m. And she joins me now in the studio to talk a little bit about We Ride Upon Styx. It's so nice to meet you.
Fabulous, thanks.
It's so funny, and I'm going to say this up front. In the back, there's your author's picture. Is a picture of you, and you're about...
I'm 5.
You're 5, yes. In a...
I peaked that year. That was it, yeah.
With a smock, a jumper. This is a big deal. You're a baton twirler.
I was. I was the baton mascot for the high school marching band.
Can I ask you why I use this picture?
So
it's a great picture.
Yeah, generally speaking, I don't actually use author photos. I have this whole weird thing where I feel like there are certain professions where it shouldn't matter what you look like, right? And so I feel like radio broadcaster is one of them, and I feel like another one is poet. That's how I started my career. And so I also think, you know, interestingly, like for women of color, that sometimes there can be weird things that happen when people start pigeonholing you once they know. And I have kind of a complicated background anyway. And so I generally don't use an author photo. But for this book, because it's set in Danvers, Danvers is an actual place, I sort of wanted to establish my bona fides in that sense. And so I dug out a picture from the archive of me at age 5, twirling my baton, doing my thing.
And it also really sets the tone.
It does, yeah.
As you look at the back picture, like, okay, now I know what I'm in. I'm in for in this book. So as I mentioned, you know, you're from the area, and this is the area where the Salem witch trials happened. How much of that was part of your world growing up?
So I grew up about a mile from where there are various historical markers. So the truth is, when I was growing up, the town of Danvers really didn't, and kind of still to this day, doesn't talk that much about the witch trials themselves. The city of Salem, which is just over the bridge, that's their bread and butter.
Been there. It's all it is.
Yes, 24/7. And it's gotten even crazier in the last like decade or so. So like I said, Danvers, it's not something that we talk about that much. We actually have a memorial that they put up, I don't know, maybe about 20 years ago. That was like one of the first real markers, like, oh yeah, this did happen here. But there were places around town, for example, the Rebecca Nurse homestead is where this woman, Rebecca Nurse, who was the oldest person to be hung, it's actually her actual homestead, and you can go and you can see it. So that was there. And then there are other places too, just around town, and they're always there, and you were just always aware of them. And so they were always just in the background of my consciousness growing up. I knew that this was a kind of a special place in certain kinds of ways. And I was always just interested in the story of these teen girls who 300 years ago just sort of kind of went nuts. And people even today are still talking like, well, why did it happen? You know, there's all kinds of theories that maybe the rye crop went bad and they had mass hallucinations. You know, other people say that it was an economic thing, that this city of Salem and the village of Salem were different. So one was more agrarian and one had more ties to Boston and London. And so some people think it was economic tensions.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So when you decided to write the book, did you go and go down a research rabbit hole, or did you just take what you grew up with?
Yes, because I really knew it really well. And there were a few things that I researched. So you know, it was funny because originally I had thought that the book was actually going to be set in Salem itself. And then I was talking to a friend of mine who's from the North Shore, and she's like, well, why don't you just set it in Danvers? Like, that's where everything happened. That's what you know. It's true that all of the places in the book, with the exception of one site in New Hampshire, but all the places are actual places. So, for example, the bowling alley is actually called, you know, Sunny Lane's Bowling Alley, or the restaurants where they hang out, like Rocco's Pizza, which still exists, you know? And so it was true that if I was going to set it in Salem, I would have had to do a lot of research because I don't know the markers in Salem that well. well. And so when she told me, like, just set it in Danvers, and I was like, oh my God, she's right. I know Danvers. I know it. I remember it. So yes, I didn't have to do that much research for the book.
My guest is Quan Berry. The name of it is We Ride Upon Styx, which is multi-layered.
You know, originally, I feel like I have to say this. Originally, the title was actually longer. The original title of the book is actually We Ride Upon Styx and Are There Presently. And the thing about that title is it's an actual quote from Tituba, who was mm-hmm. the enslaved woman back in 1692. And basically, when she was put on trial, she was the first person to confess to being a witch. And by doing that, it meant then that they showed mercy on her and that she was allowed to live. And so they mm-hmm. asked her for specifics, like, can you describe the devil? And then I just love imagining this moment in the courtroom where she turns and she begins to describe the devil, and basically she's describing her master, the Reverend Samuel Parris. You know, she's like, well, he's about this tall, he just is like this. And then at one point she's asked, well, how do the witches convene in Boston? How do you all get together? And she says, we ride upon Styx and are there presently. So
the Styx in this case on the cover are field hockey Styx.
Yes.
And it's so funny because field hockey, it's a very specific sport
for this.
It's
very Northeastern, yes.
Yeah, and it's like, this makes so much sense. And there's this 11-person roster. Which character first came to you?
I would say it's probably the character of Abby Putnam, who was their go-getter captain. I always just knew because, again, Abby Putnam, so one
Another
of the,
name, right?
Right. One of the original witch accusers was this woman, Ann Putnam Jr. Mm-hmm. Her mother was actually Ann Putnam Sr. And Ann Putnam Jr., at the age of 11, she was a believer back then. She accused many people, and her accusations, I think, led to the hangings of maybe 11 people. And then really super interestingly is about 20 years afterwards, as an adult, she then stood up in the village, Salem Village Meeting House, and apologized for her role in the hysteria. So I knew that the character of Abby Putnam, I knew I wanted to have a character who was a direct descendant of Ann Putnam.
You also have boy Corey and girl Corey.
Yes.
And they were also related. The Coreys were...
Well, there's Giles Corey, who back in the day, so Giles Corey, I've always, even as a kid, I admired him. So it was the idea that by not, he was accused of being a witch or a warlock, and by not putting in a plea, it meant that he couldn't be found guilty or innocent. And so he didn't put in a plea, but to try and get a plea out of him, they basically pressed him to death with stones. And very famously, his mm-hmm. last words, as they kept asking him, well, you know, would you want to put a plea in? Do you want to put a plea in? And his last words were, more weight. You know, and I just think that's really great.
And one more person, AJ Johnson, in your book, you had Elizabeth and Stephen Johnson were also accused of witchcraft.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. So you got another one in there.
Whoa.
So it's so interesting. So what's going on with the team when we meet them?
So...
this field hockey team.
Yeah, it's kind of like, again, they're definitely a rags to riches. So they've had some tough years. They're not looking too good. In the very opening scene, they're basically getting their butts handed to them. You know, the score is 8 or 9 to 1. The referees can't even keep track. There's mm-hmm. so many goals. They're like, well, is it 8? Is it 9? But yeah, basically they're being pounded at a summer camp in New Hampshire.
When do things start to change for them?
So basically they get their
butts kicked.
Yeah, beats, you know, exactly, butts kicked. And then their goalie, who's French-Canadian, their goalie decides that, you know, she's had enough. So you can imagine being a goalie who gets scored on 8 or 9 times. And so she basically goes back to her dorm at the summer camp, and she decides to call on the powers of darkness for a little help.
It's interesting about the teenage voice. I'm going to read a paragraph, by the way. The name of the book is We Ride Upon Styx by Quan Berry. You write in the book, fact, like a telephone booth or a pair of size 6 Sassoon jeans, the teen brain can only hold so much. This is doubly true when said information does not pertain to it. That's why teenagers are the original narcissists. It's not even in one ear, out the other. Truth is, 95% of stuff never wriggles in the first place.
True that.
What did you want to capture about teenagers, teenagerness, and then how did you as a writer want to telegraph it to us?
Yeah, so I was definitely interested, particularly in the teen girl experience. And one of the things is, you know, when you think about narratives, movies, books, they usually tell stories about team sports are usually told about boys, right? Mm-hmm. So like Ben Affleck has a new movie coming out about basketball. You know, you think of Friday Night Lights. And so I was really interested in, well, what would happen if you told a team sports story, but from a girl's perspective. There was Bend It Like at Beckham, you know, some years mm-hmm. ago, but there really hasn't been anything since. And so I was interested in thinking about it also within the realm of witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you know, 300 years ago, these girls had very limited options for what they could do. Right. And so it's like, what if you take that same group of girls and you transport them 300 years into the future and they have way more options? You know, what kinds of things are they going to do as they try and discover who they are and what they're up to? So again, I was trying to comment specifically on the teen girl sort of way of thinking. And also, you know, the book is written in first person plural.
Mm-hmm. So okay. Ask about that.
I like to say that there's no I in team, you know, as they always say. And so it's just the idea that, you know, these girls are looking for themselves, trying to figure out who they are in this world. I was also interested in writing a book that was very pointedly unladylike. So I feel like growing up, you know, all props to my mom and my grandmothers and things like that. But I definitely was told more than once that being ladylike was something that I needed to think about quite a bit. So these girls are definitely straining to not be that.
Why did the 80s seem like the right time?
Well, it's true that my field hockey team, and disclosure, full disclosure, I played field hockey from 1989. and we were, the difference though is that we were actually pretty good. And so, again, we weren't a rags to riches kind of story. And so I set in 89 because, again, I knew that time period. I didn't have to do any research. I knew the look, I knew the songs, like all that kind of stuff.
All the products, too. The products are some of my favorite things, and like the Aquanet. And there's just certain things that
Like the Sassoon jeans that you just mentioned, and things like that.
It's really fun. At one point, I'm curious, when you went back and edited, did you ever have to pull back? Did you realize I need to add more? Is this, because that can be a wonderful device to take a reader someplace. It can also get in the way.
Mm-hmm. So I know people have asked me, you know, for example, they think that because it's about teen girls, that maybe it's a YA book. And it definitely, I mean, I think that young readers could appreciate it, but it's
I don't think it's a YA.
Yeah, I don't think it's a YA book either. So, but if again, for younger readers, they wouldn't know a lot of those references.
Yeah.
You know? So even in the A.J. Johnson section, A.J. Johnson is the only African-American member of the team, you know, and she talks about the 1980s through the lens of sports and the Celtics, you know. And so there's definitely things that, again, younger readers wouldn't remember that, like the whole Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas sort of, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
The name of the book is We Ride Upon Sticks. It is by Quan Berry. So you've written before about the supernatural. What is attractive to you about it?
So when I first started writing my first novel called She Weeps Each Time You're Born, it's set in Vietnam, and basically it's about a woman who has the powers to hear the voices of the dead in Vietnam. When I first started writing that book, it was a completely different book. It was about an American nurse in Vietnam during the war there. And I realized as I was writing it that it should just be a memoir. And basically there have been American nurses who have written memoirs about their time in Vietnam. And I came to realize as I was writing that book that my strength is not that kind of research. I'm like, I'm not good at this. And so I sat back and I thought, well, what are my strengths? And because I'm a poet, I like to think that one of my strengths is language. And then another strength of mine is just simply making stuff up out of whole cloth, you know? And so having at least one magical element in a book allows you to do things that you normally wouldn't do.
Oh, that's so it opens a door for you.
Yes.
To exercise this thing that you have, this talent that you have.
I think so. And I think in this case, it makes sense because again, it's witchcraft, it's the team, they have sort of team think going on. And so it was just that much easier for me to sort of access who these people are.
It's sort of interesting. Witchcraft is kind of having a moment right now.
Yeah.
It's so we had a caller call in and talk about putting a spell on her boss.
Interesting.
Yeah, and we had a woman who practices witchcraft who's written a really interesting book on, and a lot of people tweeted it and commented on it. Why do you think that is in this moment?
So it's interesting because witchcraft is having a moment, and so are the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. When I set out to write, I wasn't thinking in terms of either. I was like, so what's going to have a moment in a couple years, and what's the time period going to be?
Maybe Radar was up as a creative person.
Maybe. Why witchcraft now? In some ways, I like to link it in positive ways to Me Too. I think witchcraft has always been about empowering women. So even if you go back through the history of witchcraft in Europe, the women who were accused of being witches oftentimes did not fit in for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe they weren't mothers, maybe they were powerful, maybe they were seen as threats. So I think that's always been true of the history of witchcraft. And now, thinking in the world in which we are living, I think that, again, there's positive aspects to the idea of women finding their voices, and that witchcraft just speaks to that.
So in the book, there's this notebook with this photo of Emilio Estevez.
Yes.
That the team members, they write their names in kind of some sort of deal with a greater force that helps them become and they have to wear these armbands made out of sweat socks. How did you decide on Emilio Estevez?
People
should be
ask
the face
me
of
that.
Darkness.
Yeah,
he's one of the nicest people ever.
Really? Yeah, I'm sure he is. And he was just in Madison last year, and I missed him. But it's funny. I'm gonna throw one of my friends, one of my field hockey friends, under the bus. So there was a woman, Jen Frazier. Hello, Jen. And back in the day, back in the 80s, Jen had two celebrity crushes, and so one was Emilio Estevez. Every time she would open her locker, there would be the photos of Emilio Estevez. And then her second celebrity crush back then, again, because it was before we actually knew how to pronounce his name, was quote-unquote Keanu Reeves, right? And so, in thinking about it, when it came time to decide, like, who I was going to pick to be this sort of, you know, teen beat heartthrob, the amazing thing is that Keanu Reeves is still with us. I mean, he still has an amazing career.
Yeah.
He's still the man, right? And so it wouldn't have made as much sense to have, you know, Keanu Reeves.
Gotcha.
You know, and so Emilio Estevez, who I think is still doing things. And he had a
behind
movie last
the scenes.
Year.
Yeah, he's become a big producer and a writer, more than a pretty face kind of guy.
Yeah.
It's okay, so we don't want to give too much away. So these young women, they decide they want to win. They make these deals. We're going to leave it there so people don't give too much away. But it feels like it could be a series. Has anybody optioned it yet?
Not yet.
It really feels like it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. No, not yet. I like to not know what's going on, so I never have people tell me, but yes, there's people working to try and make that happen.
The name of the book is We Ride Upon Styx. It is by Quan Berry. She will be at Books Are Magic tonight at 7 p.m. Quan, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.